Hi, I'm Femi Oke. Today on the stream, we are looking at the fight for gender equality in Nigeria. Just recently, the federal parliament was presented with 5 gender equality bills, and they dismissed all 5 of them. That was until women started to protest. Let me give you an idea of the landscape in Nigeria so you can understand what women who are fighting for gender equality are up against. 36 states, all of the state governors are male. So we are talking about women's rights and representation on this show. A team in Abuja went to Nigeria to actually see what women on the street had to say about it. Let's take a look.
There's no parts in the country where women are actually being represented properly. It's so low and it's been ignored for so long. We actually need something to be done about it. Because we believe that when it comes to women's rights and everything, if we women are actually there, we should be able to represent ourselves better. The men can speak for us.
And I have come to discover that for the voice of a woman to be heard worldwide, national level, it has to start from the grassroots, which is the community.
I'm going to say hello to our guests. We have Choma, Abiola and Indy. Thank you so much for being part of our show today. Choma, please introduce yourself. Tell our guests and our audience who you are and what you do.
Hello, Femi. My name is Choma Agwebo. I'm the executive director at TechRNG and I'm the convener of the State of Emergency GBV movement.
It's really good to have you. Hello, Abiola. Nice to see you. Please introduce yourself to our international audience.
Hi, I'm Abiola Akiyode Afolabi. I'm the Executive Director, Women Advocates, Research and Documentation Center, WOTC, and the convener of We Manifesto.
Good to have you. And Indy, welcome back to the stream. Please introduce yourself.
Hi, Femi. I'm Indy Kato. I'm a politician and Executive Director of the Nidari Foundation.
All right. So, audience, if you want to be part of this conversation, you're on YouTube, you can do so. Just jump into the comment section. Your discussions, your thoughts, your comments will be wrapped up in today's conversation. I am just thinking, Choma, when was the last time you demonstrated, protested about gender equality and making sure that gender equality was in the way that Nigeria approaches it? When was the last time you protested?
2022. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes, and the reason for this is because, first of all, it's shameful. It's absolutely shameful that in 2022, women in Nigeria are still negotiating their rights as full citizens of Nigeria. We come from a country where we have women, you know, the population of women is just as equal to that of men. However, you said it, right? 36 state governors, none of them are women. We have had some states where the commissioners for women's affairs have been men. Right? Look at the numbers within our legislature, whether it's the upper house or the lower house. Look at the numbers across the country. It's absolutely abhorrent. And I think the thing that gets me upset the most is the fact that this isn't priority for our legislators. And so if this isn't priority, then what is in 2022?
Indy, I'm just wondering, when you look at that map for the state governors and not a single governor is a woman, and women make up almost half the population in Nigeria. What is going on there? Is this just old-fashioned or actually contemporary misogyny in Nigeria?
It is. It's contemporary. It's really as fresh as the day goes by. We see conversations from young men on social media, and you see that, look, if we don't do something about it, if there's no strong pushback, as in even, you know, more pushback than we've been doing before, it's still going to get worse, because you see these conversations and you know that, look, these young men are going in the same direction, even though there's been so much work by feminists, young and old, to educate on these issues, to educate against patriarchy, against misogyny. You still see conversations like that. A few years ago, I was at the university and was speaking on leadership. Just for SUG leadership, we asked the crowd, you know, student union government leadership, we asked the crowd if they would allow a young woman lead them for student union. And they screamed no. The young women there at first were trying to answer yes, but when the voices were overwhelming, they couldn't answer otherwise. So this has been, you know, we're looking at governor, but right from the grassroots level, many women, all from the local government level, ward level, states, house of assemblies, to the legislative level, no, there is a resounding no. And younger generations are coming to join into that no, and it's really problematic.
Abiola, I want to share something with you. This came to us a little bit earlier on our day. This is from Anyete Ewang, who talked about it's not a problem with the law or the constitution, and I'm just going to let her pick up from there. And then, Abiola, if you could, please respond immediately after you see the video.
While the Nigerian constitution provides for formal legal equality and non-discrimination on the basis of gender, women in the society continue to face injustices in almost all spheres. This is often as a result of discriminatory laws and policies, cultural and religious norms and practices, and gender stereotypes, amongst other things, which make it all too clear that formal equality alone is insufficient to address the marginalization of women in Nigeria.
Yeah, formal equality is not alone to address issues of gender equality in Nigeria. That is correct. However, the constitution itself, it's problematic. The current constitution, which is the 1999 constitution, was brought together by some 22 men in 1999. And you can see a lot of gaps in that constitution. For example, on the issue of citizenship, women in Nigeria do not have equal citizenship with the men. Indigenship is also not defined. So while the constitution has a section 42 that deals with the issue of discrimination, there are still crises with that section. Because within that section, there are provisos which remove some rights from women. So it's a constitutional problem.
If I could just add to what Dr. Abiola is saying, I mean, look at the leadership of the country, right? Indy talked very rightly about the fact that we see these problems within all spheres of the government, right? So federal, state, local councils. But if we go back to the greatest purveyors of governance, which is the federal government, we have a president who once said that his wife belongs in the living room, in the kitchen, and in the other room. We have legislators who have said on International Women's Day that the way to support women is to marry more of them. We have a legislator who married a child and defended that action by saying he wasn't bound by the Constitution. UNICEF reports that underage marriages rose by 22% within in a four-year period following that. So sometimes when we talk about norms and cultures, and when we talk about, you know, perceptions within society, we also have to point a finger back at the leaders, because citizens will do what their leaders are doing. They will take as law, whether formal or informal, what their leaders are doing. And whether we like it or not, our legislators have not been true to true women representation in parliament.
On top of that, we have the fact that, you know what, let's look at the political angle of this. I mean, Chioma has also spoken about the legislators doing this, but then let's look at where we now go, like the practicality of it all. For me, as a young woman who is in politics, we see this every day. Once you step out, these same men, I mean, they're saying that there are no issues here, you know, who's stopping you from running? But these things are always waiting for you. Examining these bills and seeing that as soon as you come out to run for office, you're asked, where does your husband come from? If your husband does not come from where you're running from, you cannot go there and run. If you come from a different place, or if he comes from there and you come from a different local government, it's a different issue entirely. You can run. Now, many of these things, these things just point to one thing, and it's women don't run. You don't belong here. Whichever way it is put in place, whichever way it is presented, it all comes down to our rights are not equal. You do not belong here. You should keep short. You should not be seen. You should not be heard. And it keeps happening over and over again. And it's the gaslighting for me that at the end of the day, somebody will come and tell you, yes, okay, but what does this mean? Nobody has ever stopped anyone from collecting a position in her husband's place. Oh, this woman managed to... They use Mimi Akingube, who is from Rivers, and her husband is Ondo. Now, how somebody had the audacity to say, oh, that was not stopped. Mm-hmm. But we also remember the pushback and the fight she had to fight to get into this position. Yeah. And it's just traumatic that our own children, even our children, you give birth to children, and those children cannot be Nigerian like you. And you have people telling you, no, it's not like that. If you go to the offices, it does not amount to that. Even if, why does it exist in this space? Why is it there? Why is it there? And for the women who don't know, you come and just realize that it is there. And just feel like, you know what? What I feel are my rights, even my existence as a middle-class woman, because many people are ignorant. But once you find out, you just realize how low, how bottom barrel, how under the crust of society you are. And it's just not fair. It's not fair at all.
See, guess this is what I'm looking at here. So I'm thinking that the protesting has had an impact. When all of those five bills were dismissed, Have a look here on my laptop. Nigerian women protest Parliament rejection of pro-equality bills. You know this. This is for the benefit of our audience. And then Nigerian Parliament rescinds decision on gender equality bills. How fast did that happen, Choma? And does that mean something?
To be honest, Femi, it's something to celebrate, but it's not something to celebrate in its entirety. The first reason is, why did we have to protest in the first place? One thing that Nigerians have learned is that when legislators want to do something for themselves, they will do it in one day, right? We have seen across the country, legislators will sit on a bill, first reading, second reading, it will go to their committees, they will come back, they will do a third reading, and they will pass it into law in one day. We're not asking for a gift. We're not asking for any favors. We're asking that anomalies that exist within our constitution be corrected. Now, to the question you asked about how quick did that happen? Yes, it did happen very quickly. But when you think about the fact that we shouldn't have been out on the streets in the first place, on the day when women should be celebrated globally, Nigerian women were out on the streets saying, we don't want to be stateless because we get married. Indy mentioned that we don't want to be stateless because we get married. Now, the snag with the House, you know, the House of Representatives rescinding their decision on three bills is that the Senate has done nothing. And because this is a constitution amendment process, because the Senate has done nothing, if we get to the end of this constitution amendment process and the Senate doesn't do anything, it's still null and void. And let's not forget that even after this happens, it then has to go to the 36 states of the Federation, and we need 2/3 of the state houses of assembly to say yes. That in itself already presents a problem, because look at all the work we're having to do at the federal level. So it's absolutely, absolutely problematic. It is completely shameful that in 2022 we're having these conversations. So while we rejoice on the one hand, we are reminded deep down in our hearts about how long this journey is, the amount of patriarchy and misogyny that we're up against, and we just continue to find comfort in ourselves, to be honest.
Abiola, you were going to keep in mind. Abiola and then Indy. Go ahead.
Yes. Yeah. I think we need to celebrate our wins anyway, because this is the first time that we're having this kind of victory. And it's the first time that women are coming together, you know, to insist and demand that this has to be done. And they're saying women occupying the National Assembly, it has never happened before. So we're there, and we're pushing against the misogynists in the National Assembly, because it is the time, you know, for women to reaffirm our right. It's a question of our identity. It's a question of who we are. If we don't address this issue, we are no longer, you know, Nigerians. It came to them by surprise, because they never expected that Nigerian women can come, you know, together in that regard, both in the formal sector, informal sector, private, you know, grassroots, Nigerian civil society.
It's half the country, Abiola. It's half the country. Now, not that everyone should have the same political views, but if you don't even have access to the political system, that is a lot of votes, potentially, right? If you can use that power base. That's a lot. There's a lot of votes there at stake.
Yeah, because there are quite the issue of our numerical strength. And we say that every time. Yeah. And the truth of the matter is that the women in Nigeria constitute over 50%. And so what this is also putting on our table, that we need to go back to the drawing board and strategize very well. Come the next election, we should be able to prove that numerical strength. And that's what we're also showing by occupying the National Assembly. And good enough, on the 8th of March, it was only not at the National Assembly. It was also happening simultaneously across the country. You know, so women were occupying the state houses of assembly, you know, making the same demand. Our messages are clear. We don't want to remain a second-class citizen. No retreat, no surrender. And until when they rescind the five bills, we're not asking for 2/5. We're asking for the 5 gender bills.
Who's talking to you, Abiola? Who's talking to you?
Well, we have had conversation with the National Assembly, particularly the House of Representatives. Some members of the House of Representatives have come around. The Senate also had come around. But we're insisting that our demands are clear. Mm-hmm. They are non-negotiable. They are not reducible. They are the minimum that we can take as Nigerian citizens. And, well, with what the House of Rep has done, what it means is that they are partly listening to us. They have taken 3 out of the 5. Yes, we know they will go back and vote. So we are expecting that they will vote. And we're also working with them at their campaign officers. So we have women who are also holding them accountable at that level. So we are doing some two strategy stuff, one at the National Assembly and also at the constituency offices.
I am going to share a couple of thoughts from social media, Indy, particularly as you said that on social media some of these misogynistic thoughts are out there, and that we kind of really need to think about how do you educate the population so they understand what gender equality really means. So this is Ejiofor. He says, regarding marginalisation, the women themselves are causing the marginalisation. The women hardly stand for fellow women. Most times they prefer male leadership. And then one more here. Tariq, I'm going to say I beg to disagree because I'm sure that's what he meant. Perhaps you can give examples where injustice and marginalisation has happened. Women in Nigeria get equal opportunities in terms of employment and treatment, just like their male counterparts. We're talking about political representation here specifically, Indy. Bounce off the back of those two tweets. Thoughts?
I mean, it's such a thing on social media to speak and, you know, give absolutes with no data sets to work with. And that's what we're seeing here. We have women, and it's also an insult because women actually do so much. Between the three of us, there's actually a lot of work, and an extended work, you know, of women advocates doing this work, bringing out this data, presenting it, doing the research to show that, look, Nigerian women are really, really down the scale on issues. And you do all of this work and you still hear it. And then we got to take these things over and over again. No, it's not true that women receive the same equal treatment. You see it over and over again when women go looking for jobs. You would see if a man and a woman are there to get a job, especially in the federal government area, you hear people say, oh, you have a man to take care of you, go back, don't worry. There's so many reasons why women don't get jobs. So many reasons why women do not get high-paying jobs, why women do not get promoted, all tied to gender. And this is the gaslighting I speak of. Mm-hmm. That you're made to feel like your sincere concerns, your experience does not even exist. And somebody just puts it out there, you know, with so much confidence, like, I know this, so everything you're saying is not true. You're looking at Northern Nigeria, where I come from, and many girls cannot even go to school. It starts from there. And then when you say women do not support women, apart from the fact that we can point to the absolute violence men met out against each other, and none of that is ever brought to, you know, the issue on men, but it's always brought for women. Women do support women, but let's look at socialization, Femi. Women are not even socialized to see themselves as leaders. You go down to our books, even our English textbooks when we're growing up, and everybody has to read English textbooks. Women are in the kitchen, the daughters are in the kitchen, leadership is not for women. As a child, I was brilliant. What was I told? You'll make a good first lady, never a governor. Many of these girls have been raised like this. They've been raised like this. The church is telling them this, the mosque is telling them this, school is telling them this. How many of them can grow beyond this socialization? Those of us who are speaking like this are subject to so many insults. You hear conversations like, oh, the feminists have started again. These women have started again. Even the women who are
angry,
the
women.
Angry women, you say, you hear they have come again. You know, you see the disdain, you see the mockery, and every single time you have to come against this mockery, you have to come against these conversations. After putting all the work, if you go to WANC's website, go and see what tech has been doing, you will see all of these things. In fact, Invictus has brought out these figures over again. And one man will just come from nowhere. He has not worked with any data set, no data, nothing. You just come and say, no, it's not true. Women are not in these spaces because they don't want to be there. Or women want an unfair advantage, and it's not true. This is not right. The correct response to all of this is, what is the data you're working with? Present it. And they cannot present. And it's shameful. And like I said, this is gaslighting. This classic gaslighting.
Let me share, Indy, if I may, one more thought, because this is very popular. So if we can break down some of these stereotypes, we've done something in this 25 minutes. So Apagu says, I think religion and culture are two major culprits responsible for this social exclusion. In the northern part of Nigeria, women's place is believed to be in the kitchen, and the other room is buttressed by a president some time ago. Indy actually explained what that meant. We won't go into detail. But religion and culture, is that an excuse, a reason, something you have to overcome? Abiola, you start with that common thought about why women aren't doing better in politics in Nigeria.
Well,
Yes, religion has actually played a lot of role in marginalization of women. We have a situation where, you know, women had gone to contest for election and they had to lose election because, for example, in Zaria, a local government election, because she wanted to contest for the chairman of that local government. And they felt that she cannot be the chair because by their religion, you know, she cannot lead. Culture has also been a major challenge, which patriarchy has used to drop women behind, you know, trying to remind women on a daily basis that they're second-class citizens and that there are roles that women, you know, cannot play. And of course, with religion and culture, we know it's a long journey. You know, it's a long, tortuous journey to deal with those issues. But we are working with traditional rulers. We are working with religious leaders. We are also deconstructing the text, you know, of religions, you know, where people also read those texts also to their own advantage. Yes, they are huge, you know, in the patriarchal framework, but well, there are also a lot of pushback that we have also seen of recent,
Yes, it's really interesting that on Twitter, on social media, I've got a lot of men talking. And then when we reached out to women, we then got some really interesting comments like this one from Irene and Aisha. Have a listen. We're looking at strategies now. How do you go forward from here?
I think the biggest challenges to improving women's rights and representation in Nigeria are the systemic, the embedded gender bias and cultural and social norms that stifle women's ability to access opportunities, be they economic or political. And again, we have a patriarchy, what I call the biggest elephant in the room.
We need to rethink our current strategy on women's rights and representation in Nigeria. We've played, for example, First Lady advocacy for decades and it's gotten us less than 5% representation in the National Assembly. We know that instead of acting like supplicants, we need to make demands because power concedes nothing without demands.
Strategies. Indy, help us.
I think, again, a grassroots up approach is really important right now, educating people at that grassroots level. One of the things I think a statement that I always want to be out there and I want to put forward here is culture is now. Culture must be subject to the necessities of now. We can't keep depending on, our culture 50 years ago was like this, and so we're just going to keep doing like this. And I think our central messaging should be that, letting Nigerians understand the necessity of the times, because right now our country is as good as folding under the weight of these inequalities. Mm-hmm. We can draw a straight line from the inequalities that women face and the insurgency, the terrorism, and all of these other things we face in the country right now. So I want us to approach it from that angle. Look, right, this is the necessity of now, and the necessity of now means that women should be in this room. Equality should be a thing for our country to stand a chance. That is how I intend the message to go out. Thank you.
I spoke earlier, and Olu spoke earlier to us, to give us some practical advice. So she knows the landscape, the political landscape. She knows the battles that are being fought. And then she said, OK, this is what we need to do next. Have a listen, have a look.
It is more than just getting women to run for offices. We need women who are forward-thinking. We need women who are feminist, women who understand the importance of equality. But then we must transcend mere words and go into action by sponsoring and donating to women campaign and actually voting them into office to go in there and take up space. Because it is much more important to, it's not just to run for offices, it is more important to win.
Choma is nodding. Articulate that nod for the last thought for our show. Choma, go ahead.
To be honest, I completely agree with putting money behind women. And this is one of the big failures of, you know, one of the gender bills that was thrown out. If women are going to be on the ballot, we need women in positions of authority within the political parties. And one of the gender bills was asking for 35% affirmation for women in leadership positions within the political parties. So, yes, I completely agree with what Olu was saying. We need to put money behind women. We need to ensure that when women are on the ballot, that they win. And we need to ensure that we hold political parties accountable when they substitute women. We're going into an election cycle now, and women are going to win primaries. But what's going to happen between when the the primaries are won and when the elections really come around, they will be substituted. We've seen this happen in 2015. Okay. We've seen this happen in 2019. We've seen women told to step down, that it's not their time because they were given free forms. So Chima, now we want women to win and we're going to work towards that.
Choma, thank you for sharing your movement with us. And Indy and Abiola, thank you for your questions and your comments on YouTube and on Twitter as well. I'll see you next time. Take care, everybody. Thank you.